meeting of the new year, the workshop for Wednesday, January the 13th of 2016 is called to order. And the agenda will be miscellaneous commission policies and other business.
There's, Jim reminded me of one thing that I forgot to add to this. I'm sure there's going to be other topics and certainly anything commissioners want staff to look into, we'll add to the list. This kind of covers some of the things that we do annually, you know, such as, you know, committee assignments, that sort of thing, agenda format, et cetera. But also some either new policies or direction from the commission on existing rules and regs and how you want staff to enforce them or not enforce them and whether we should change any. So I've got a list of eight items here. And, you know, not looking for any decisions or necessary direction today, but just kind of tee them up, see if you concur these are things that we need to work on in the coming months and any other topics that you think you might want to do. So with that, just start with number one, holdover policy. You know, for a long time when a lease expires, naturally, through its own term, we've allowed the tenant to continue occupying the space and continue operations in what we call holdover status. And essentially turns into a month-to-month agreement. And the rent continues at that same rate that they were paying prior to the expiration. If you read back this past year, or actually 2 years ago, Port of Port Angeles got in a little bit of trouble because of this very issue. And, you know, our leases are very clear for the tenant that, you know, 90 days prior to expiration, contact the port if you want to renew it, and you know, we'll negotiate and create a new lease and everything. But we've had a number of tenants that, their leases have expired, and we've allowed them to continue for quite some time in holdover status. And I'm just not comfortable with that, and I'm sure Abigail isn't either from an auditor standpoint. So I think we really need to address, you know, policy on this. And checking with a couple other port districts, what they do as an incentive to come back to the bargaining table to renegotiate a lease is as soon as you go into holdover status, your rent increases. And in some cases, as much as 150%. And so that's kind of the situation. And I'm not sure 150% is right or not. I think we need to have something. So I don't know if Abigail, you want to add anything to that.
So 150%, so that's more than twice as much.
Well, if you're paying $100 a month,
so 100% increase would be twice as much.
Yeah.
So this is 150%.
Yeah.
So this is more than twice as much.
It's Port of Olympia. I think Port of Bellingham is 200%. Something like that. So, and the whole incentive, and all of our space is pretty much occupied right now. And we've had people come asking to rent space. So if you got a tenant that is on the fence or doesn't know if they want to continue, whereas we've got somebody beating on their door saying, hey, I'll take that space, you know, I think it's the right thing to do, kind of keep everything moving. And you know, these, if you're a good business, you know what you're going to do. And you know, 90 days prior, you're going to tell us, well, let the lease expire, I'm out of here, or you know, I'd like to negotiate another 5 years or, you know, whatever.
And the reason from the poor standpoint that this is important is because when you go in month to month, you don't end up with CPI increases.
No, you still get CPI.
You still do?
Yeah, you still get CPI.
On an annual basis.
Yeah, it just, we just want some more security that we're going to have those tenants there long term. If they go in a month to month, they can give 30-day notice and leave. Or this will at least give us a direction.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you guys, you know, again, we just went through our renegotiation. Have you ever had it go longer than would be appropriate, where, you know, it's not the tenant, but it's more the staff, and you're working out a negotiation with the tenant? I mean, would that trigger a no man's land where if we kind of policy set in place, we might have to talk about, you know, how it goes, how like contract was negotiated.
I have a feeling that if it was staff-initiated delay for a certain purpose, that it wouldn't be assessed. This is for the chronic people that really don't want to come to the table. They're happy with their present arrangement and really don't want to come in. But we have been negotiating, your lease particularly, we've been negotiating for 3 months, so that was initiated by us.
So again, not looking for any direction today. It's just a topic. If there's anything you'd like us to look into this or bring back to you on this topic. I was going to check some more ports and see what their written policy is on it. Get some examples, et cetera, so.
Okay.
All right, and that one. Committee assignments, you know, we do this in January every year. I think Sue provided, you can extra paper copy for me. And I was going to get with, you know, it's the second one down, the Climate Action Committee. I was on that originally, and then Eric volunteered to take it. And he hasn't been too enamored with that committee, so I'm not sure if he still wants to continue or not. I'll check with him on that.
Actually, I was on it in the meantime.
That's right, yeah.
Because, but then it seemed like every time they had a meeting, I was gone. And since you only have quarterly meetings, I only attended one half of a year. And it made it difficult. I don't know how that happened, but.
You know, the CEO breakfast group, I'm still on that. That continues every month with kind of my counterparts, you know, city manager, EDC, county, PUD, et cetera, school district. Chamber of Commerce, you know, we try to get to the lunch as much as possible. Yeah, I don't know, the Northwood Canal, do we still pay membership dues to that soon? Yeah, I've never gone to that. I don't know if any.
Well, Pete was supposedly our rep for that. And it's in district.
The Hood Canal, Northwood Canal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we pay
what was
our,
your district?
Yeah, we pay our dues, Pete, to that, but I'm not sure anybody ever goes to any of their meetings. I don't even know how often they meet.
And they only meet, I'm trying to get that list up, I don't have it in front of me right now, but they only meet once a year?
No, I'm not really sure how often they meet. I get emails from them once in a while.
While we, Sue, why don't we check, see how often they meet, and maybe we reassess our involvement in that one. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, if, Ozzy's still doing the underground coordinating?
Yeah.
That's an as-call thing. Right. Same with the Watershed Council. I've gone to that, whatever they call it. They haven't done that in a long time.
So Larry does that, Larry Ozzy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do the Watershed.
Oh, you do the Watershed.
He does the underground
okay.
coordinating. But again, the Watershed Council, that doesn't cost us any money as far as dues or anything. And they haven't, I don't think they met all last year. You still want to do the Fort Ward Advisory Committee, Pete?
Yeah, that's kind of like the clean air committee. I mean, yeah, it's fine. I mean, unless anybody else wants to do it, I'm happy to give it off, but I've been sitting in there, so I kind of know everybody.
Okay. Healthy Jefferson Steering Committee. No meetings for now. I've never gone to one of those. Has anybody gone to any of those? That's pretty real. I'm healthy.
Is that just one of those things that was formed for a specific purpose, steering committee, and then now that's gone away?
I think it may have. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is kind of wrapped up with the hospital project and, you know, the new building and all that or not. We'll check on that one. Good Canal Coordinating Council, that's as called. I've gone to that over the years. And that's kind of part of the whole Puget Sound Partnership effort that Greg Moore started.
Mm-hmm. So how often are those?
Maybe twice a year.
Mm-hmm. Because I was thinking that that really kind of tees in with the MRC, because we've had the Hood-Canal Coordinating Council come and give us a briefing at the MRC annually, and I didn't realize how many meetings there were, but it would kind of seem that that would kind of go together. So that might be something that I could add and then have to the MRC, which I really enjoy, and it might make it a little bit more cohesive.
Now, if you want it, like to be the alternate or something, mm-hmm. you couldn't make it. Again, that will meet very, the actual council doesn't meet very often. Energy lunch, what's the future of that, Steve?
Well, they're trying to make it be more local. And Eric's not here. I was on the steering committee for a while, and I'm no longer on it. And Eric has been tapped to be on it. I think he's willing to. If he's willing to, and we can get a steering committee that'll keep that going, there's a group, a core group of about four or five of us that would continue that. But right now, it's kind of in flux. The people that have been doing it from New York are willing to continue to get speakers, but they're not wanting to continue the day-to-day operations like getting meeting spaces and getting the, so that's in flux. I can stay on that, but it may not be anything to stay on for a while. We'll have to, we'll know by the end of this month.
Okay. Jefferson County Joint Growth Management Steering Committee, you've gone to one of those, right?
Yeah, they've only had
one. Called one.
Yeah, they've only had one meeting.
They'll be having more of those this year, because this is part of the county's effort to update their comprehensive plan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you, Brad, you guys okay?
Sure.
Primary and alternate. Solid Waste, Al does that. And again, that's another call. Higher Ed Committee, I've done those for years. John Collins used to do that, and when he left, I took over the duties. When the director of that, or the president of the committee, passed away last year, we only had one meeting. Scott Wilson kind of stepped in to do it. I'm not sure what the future of that committee is going to be. I normally host it in our conference room over in our admin building. But
Larry, that. I could do that. If you want to step out of it, I could jump in if there's another one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with it this year. They're trying to get somebody to kind of step up and run the committee. You know, it's one of those committees where everybody's willing to go and drink coffee and have donuts, but not be responsible. So.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. Okay, Pete.
Okay.
Peninsula Regional Emergency Planning Committee, I sit on that. Al's gone a couple of times when I wasn't able to make it. And essentially, we meet every other month. And that's Bob Hamlin at the County Emergency Management. So that will continue. The PIF Fund, that's called by the county when there's some money. And of course, that's that fund that we're using for the coal seam feasibility study. So that probably should continue if Steve and Pete are willing to continue on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
The MRC, assume Steve, you want to continue with mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Me as an alternate. Unless one of the commissioners wants to be the alternate. Those are evening meetings, by the way.
Yeah, 2-hour evening meeting.
Yeah. The NMDA Boatyard Committee, Al and I have got that, and that's essentially a monthly meeting. We go to that pretty regularly. Same with the Marina Committee. And Tammy does that as the alternate. Actually, we need to change that to the new name, to the no longer RC&D.
NODC.
NRDC, yeah.
North Olympic Development Council.
Mm-hmm.
That's a monthly session. You want to continue, Steve, as the alternate?
Yeah, but this brings up a point that I was going to, we might be discussing a little bit further on in here, Commissioner reimbursement for meetings, because On the MRC, for example, we'll have regulars and alternates, and they both attend, and they both have equal input, and they're both as like equals in the MRC. And then it's useful to have the extra people there for the projects that get done and the extra input from two different perspectives. And so I've not really been attending those because you've been going. I think it's something I'd like to get more involved in. But then that begs the question, do we both want to attend? Because then would we, because it's like a, it's in a squim and it's a chunk out of your day. It ruins the afternoon.
It pretty much takes the whole afternoon.
Yeah. So then we went back down here on after committee assignments, commissioner reimbursement for meetings. We need to figure out, is that going to, would that be covered? Is that something we want to cover? I don't even know.
Well, that's what we are. Those are some of the mm-hmm. questions that Donna, you know, brings to me and the gym and Abigail, and you know, what constitutes a quote official meeting for a commissioner to get, you know, what was $114 reimbursement. You know, I don't get paid any extra to go to any of these meetings.
That's because we work, you like a rented mule, I think. Right. I was told that by our attorney. Right.
But that's something to consider.
Yeah, I would think, I would be interested in that, I think. But it'd have to be something that should be on a continuing basis, because just going to one meeting, you miss out on all the context of what's going on before.
Yeah, because so much of it's carried over. And when John Collins, when he was on the commission, he and I both used to go to that.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to be an alternate or a lead?
Well, no, I'm just going to be an alternate, but I was considering going, attending more as being an alternate like they have on the MRC committee, where it's an active alternate that's at all the meetings and fully participates, although when you come to votes, you only have one guy that votes. That's about the only difference.
Yeah. You guys carpool?
Yeah.
Pacific Coast Congress, Port Management and Harbor Masters Board. Continues. And actually, that's a pretty good organization. We don't go to a lot of their conferences, but they've got a pretty good network, emails where they, you know, somebody will have an issue or a question and they'll post it and they'll get 100 responses from up and down the West Coast from marinas and boatyards, you know, depending on what the question is. It's actually a pretty good organization. Board Employee Safety Committee. I'm not sure why it's on here, but
well, for a while there were some issues with getting the safety program up to speed, but that's been accomplished.
Yeah. And it's really, you know, we've been talking to Al about possibly changing somehow, you know, how the committee is organized and run. So. And actually, it's not a commission thing, but I know, you know, you have a big interest in safety issues. So what do we do with that?
Well, that's kind of a mute issue now because the program's up to speed. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll just cross that one out then?
Yeah. Port Townsend Marine Trade Association.
Well, we went past the Port Newsletter Committee. I realize we don't have a newsletter anymore, but we do have a thing that comes out in the paper, what, quarterly? You know, the thing that we pay to have Scott put in the paper, which kind of could replace that. I mean, I'm not sure if that's falling under the purview of Kevin.
Yeah, really, Kevin and Larry and I kind of do that. We do it quarterly, so the commissioner wants to get involved in certain. Mm-hmm. And that's just an ad. It's not really much of a newsletter. It's just what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we used to, I think Dave Thompson used to sit on, we actually had a meeting with a commissioner and staff and all that when we had the paper newsletter. So I don't know, what do we want to do with that? Leave it on there or something, or scratch it out, or what?
You know, if we leave it on there, I'd like to widen it to more of a Port Public Relations Committee or something that talks more than a newsletter. So a PR committee would be good. And it could do various things.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe have one commissioner sit on it, meet. We'll come up with something, or we meet monthly or quarterly or something like that.
You could put my name up on, yeah, I work with Kim a lot anyway, so I have a rapport with him.
Okay, and yeah, we'll work out a schedule of some sort and we'll sit down with Kevin and kind of come up with a little definition of what the intent of that is. Port Towns Marine Trade Association, I haven't gone for a while. Are you still going, Brad, or?
They've canceled several meetings. They had one last night and I couldn't make it, so.
Okay. So just leave that as a call. Moore's Tenants Union, we have Brad and Jim.
There hasn't been a meeting for quite some time.
Well, I'll leave that on there as,
sure,
as called. The PRTPO, Pete, you're still, and Brad, you're on there for the big one, and I'm on the small one. Are we all okay to continue that, or?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
You know, Puget Sound Partnership, when they first started that, under Greg Warren, there was a lot of meetings, and I went to all of them. Of course, I was also in the MRC at that time. And they really have gone into a different mode of operation now, where they don't do as much in the outreach and going around Puget Sound having these meetings in different regions. They're still out there. So I'd recommend we leave it there. It's as called. I haven't been to one in probably 10 months.
So they had it? They've had some?
They've had some. Mm-hmm. But,
I know that...
I don't know if you want, because of the MRC, if you want to be an alternate or something.
I know that Phil Johnson comments on them when he's at the MRC meetings, because he attends them. But I'm not sure how many there are. Maybe what I'll do is I'll look into seeing where and how many of those things there are, because that would, again, tie in with the MRC.
Right. Okay. The next one, I am no longer on that committee. And so we don't, you know, that was something, because I was the port representative for the whole state on the RCO committee for WPPA, and they're in the process of appointing somebody else to that committee, and that met twice a year. And when it did meet, the RCO picked up all the costs of that, travel, food, et cetera. So we can just take that one off soon. The Washington Airport Managers Association, we go to that. They have an annual conference, and a lot of back and forth during the year between the various airport managers, so that'll continue. And they're the ones that are putting on the conference next month over in Puyallup. Washington Boating Alliance, I've been going to that. That's a monthly meeting. In fact, we got one tomorrow. And it'll be a fairly big one tomorrow to go over all the legislative issues, since the legislature convened this week. And this, you know, it's a alliance of all boating interests, everything from kayaks to yachts. Washington Finance Officers Association.
I'm a member.
You're a member of it?
Yeah. They have conferences periodically, but I haven't attended any meetings yet.
Okay. WPPA Aviation Committee, this normally is held either at the spring and the winter meetings as part of the conference, and Jim has been going to it. And Pete, I think you've gone to a couple of them?
Yeah, I go to.
Okay. Put your name down.
I'll continue to go.
Yep. The Board of Trustees, now this is the meeting that at the spring and winter WPPA conference on the Friday morning, they have the Board of Trustees. And Pete and Steve, you signed up, but I had to fill in for you because, you know, to make the vote. So I've always done that. If you're going to do that, one of you got to, you know, kind of commit to being there on a Friday morning to cast the vote. It's not a big thing, but as part of the association, they need to have these Board of Trustee meetings. So you two want to still be the primary and alternate?
You want to leave it like?
I'm happy to keep doing it. If anybody, Brad or Steve, if you guys want to step up, that's fine too. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay. you know, the rest of these are all the WPPA committees, and they've been in flux. They've changed their format. And like the Economic Development Committee used to meet separately, and now they are trying to do that as part of the spring and winter meeting. And I don't know if we need to make a primary of any of us to go to these, but I think whenever the opportunity is there and one of us is available, you know, we should go. There's a lot of good information that is, you know, given out at these sessions. And Steve used to do the next one, the Environmental Committee.
Yeah, I actually am on the Environmental Committee up for the WPPA. I get all of the emails and stuff from Jerry, so, and I've always attended their meetings, so I could continue to do that.
And they may, I think they're still mulling it over. There's such an uproar when they changed the format to not have a separate environmental meeting and it folded into the spring and winter meeting that the last I heard is they're looking at splitting it back out again. Mm. That was normally in the fall, mm-hmm. October timeframe.
Finance and admin is still separate. They meet.
Right, that's still a separate.
They also have a.
I assume Amy's no longer going to go for us.
No, she's not going for
you. And.
Is Amy going to go?
What's that?
Is Amy going to go?
No. Yeah,
that's why I just joked. I doubt she's going to make it to the next one. Abigail will take that one. The Legislative Committee, I've been doing that. And they normally get together twice a year. A lot of input again. It's, you know, legislative items that we want to either support or not support, you know, based on the Ford industry. So if anybody else wants that, they're welcome to it. But again, they if you go to the spring and winter meeting, they usually have a legislative update as part of that agenda. Then the Marina Committee, Steve, you and I have been kind of attending those. Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, so. And I think that's it, unless somebody knows of any other committee.
So did you agree to stay Board of Trustees as Pete and then Steve as the alternate for WPPA?
Yeah, that's what we agreed, right, Pete?
Yeah, that's what we agreed.
Okay, because that's on the meeting agenda, so we can just refer to that later today.
Okay, well, if there's nothing else on that, next item kind of fits into this is the commissioner reimbursement. Yeah, we may want to get with our attorney to get you know, some guidance as well. I spent quite a bit of time the last week going through the RCWs trying to find a definition of an official meeting for an elected official, city council, board commissioner, county commissioner. You know, what qualifies, you know, it talks about, you know, carrying out the business of the port. And I think, you know, like these committees that we just went through, if the port has a seat at the table, like the Port Warden Advisory Committee, because I'm just looking at that one, and, you know, Pete, you're our designated representative, then that's an authorized official meeting. But some of them.
Right.
Right. But, you know, things like, you know, a constituent wants to meet with you. You know, in my mind, that's kind of part of what.
I've never charged for that.
You're right, and I don't think anybody has. I don't know if any of you have or not.
No, I have. I was told that that was an official meeting because you had to meet with a constituent in the form of as a commissioner. He wanted to talk to you as a commissioner, then that's your commissioner duty, so.
Gosh, I guess you guys were worth a lot of money then.
Yeah, see, my mind. That's what you're elected to do, is talk to your constituents. And so I don't know. But it's that, and like what you brought up, if you go to the NODC meeting with me, and only one of us can vote, you know, should you charge $114, you know, plus mileage to go to that? I think we need to, after reviewing everything, I think we need to get some, you know, attorney input on this too. You know, if you volunteer for something, well, know, it's one thing if you go to the actual meeting, but if, then if they say we're looking for some volunteers to work this weekend, well, is that a continuation of your official duty for the port? Or is it something that you're just doing because you want to do it and be part of the effort or something? So it's kind of a real gray area, you know, and
To charge for a meeting, you know, with a constituent or whatever, I mean, that could be a phone call or an email or, I mean, it could be every day kind of thing. And I just feel right about doing that. So, yeah.
Because you could max out your whole thing in the first 3 months.
Yeah, easy.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about real meeting. You know, I have to sit down and come and get a office and just bumping into somebody out there in the parking lot that doesn't count. And there's a lot of meetings that I don't consider like that, but there are some. For example, here's one that I'm thinking about is I go out and I remove the eelgrass buoys with the MRC, and it takes an entire day, and the port supplies a boat and me, and so I've been charging for that. It's $114, and I spend a day doing it, but it's kind of like a part of the MRC, but not really. I mean, it's not like a meeting. It's a thing that I'm doing because it has to get done. So,
but that's what's causing staff a little bit of queasiness, you know. It's and that's a good example, going to the MRC meeting, their evening meeting once a month, no problem. But, you know, the port interest really being served by you volunteering for this extra duty, if you will. So I think we just need to review all that and make sure we're comfortable with it.
Here's another good example. So Chris at Coast calls me and he needs to have lunch. So I drive down to Quilty and have lunch with him. Is that a charge? Or, you know, if I feel like I want to sit down with Dan Wiggins, talk more about the new building, but that's my initiative, so is that not a charge? Like, do we want to pick a direction as far as, you know, if the constituent calls, we charge. If the constituent doesn't call, we don't charge. I don't know how to work that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what we need to think it through and kind of come up with some rules of the road that we all can kind of work with. And there'll always be, you know, those onesies and twosies here and there that we may not fit, you know, nice and neat into whatever those rules are. But I'd appreciate if the commissioners would just kind of think it through and
get comfortable with. I asked Port Attorney a couple of years ago what constituted a meeting, and she said that it was just at your discretion.
Yeah.
And that there really wasn't a, which is really seems bizarre to me. You'd think that would be well defined.
Yeah.
It's not in the RCW.
Yeah.
Well defined.
Yeah.
So, well, let me get with Carolyn and Pat O'Malley, and this is something we can talk about again in the future. It's, yeah. Here's a favorite topic, independent contractors. Steve, you asked that this be brought up again. And again, there's two basic issues. The ever-present one of requiring insurance to protect the port from a liability issue, but also the kind of a gifting of the credit of the state issue where the taxpayers have paid for all this infrastructure and you've got commercial activity earning a profit off that infrastructure and not paying anything for that privilege. And with the ever increasing cost to maintain that infrastructure, is it reasonable that we charge some sort of a fee, you know, to help maintain that?
And I'd like to add one more thing to that paragraph, and that's to make sure that all the independent contractors are paying their fair share of taxes. In other words, that they all have a city, if they're working here in Port Townsend, they need to have a Port Townsend license and pay taxes to the city. Whether they're from Seattle or Timbuktu, you know, if they're coming here to Port Townsend to do business and they transact business in the city of Port Townsend, they need to pay B&O taxes.
Right, and we require the business license now, but I'm not sure how far we want to go with being the one to verify whether or not they paid their B&O tax in the city.
Well, last time we discussed this and Carolyn Lake was here, she said that it was not a gifting of state. It did not constitute a gifting of state.
Okay.
I think we had, see, Al was doing some work and he was contacting other people that had open yards, and he asked any other yards in the state if they were just letting it go for free and not having insurance. And I think we're the only one that is doing it this way. In other words, we're the outlier. And I don't know, I'm not comfortable being the outlier. I mean, there's a reason that other people are doing it the way they're doing it, and I'd like to explore that reason more fully.
There is a interesting caveat to this, and that is that, you know, like Haven or the co-op, probably the new Armstrong guys, to some extent as well, uses outside contractors within their framework. And often they'll do that on a project that's sitting on poor property, not necessarily their property that they're using or owning. And so that's one thing. The other is, you know, just being in the yard and watching what goes on, it is a structure that allows, it's almost like an apprentice journeyman. I've seen a lot of independent contractors, you know, mature and fold themselves into what's going on at the court. Top five being a good example. And so that's just another thing to consider, as far as it is a useful structure that brings people kind of up out of the school, lets them get their feet wet, and then they work into the system at some point.
Right, and that system, I think, should probably be a system of responsibility, where you're responsible for being a responsible business owner, paying your taxes to the city, paying insurance, and paying for the facilities that you're utilizing. It's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that at all. I'm just kind of framing it a little bit. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's wonderful that's occurring, and I think it's a beautiful way for it to happen. It's an affordable way, and it's a real way. You know, it's not like ivory tower. It's get out and get your hands dirty and get into the system.
Right.
Okay. So any guidance to staff? You want us to bring something back? Give some more? I remember Al's spreadsheet.
The last time we discussed this, you know, we also kind of went down the road of, is there a way to find some more affordable insurance for, you know, a person just getting started and has a little toolbox and nothing else,
yeah.
You know, no assets and whatnot. And we really didn't get very far with that. You know, had the ETC involved to some degree, but we really didn't succeed in finding any other, you know, reasonable alternatives. So maybe we should try that again. Okay. Have another look at that.
Or we could also get a hold of the other ports that are successfully doing this. And like, that's one thing I really like about being members of the WPPA is other ports will always share information with you, how they're doing it, how it works and how it doesn't work, and get with them and figure out how do they deal with that.
Well, in fact, in about 2 weeks, we'll be at the Seattle Boat Show. There'll be a whole bunch of mm-hmm. ports with their booths here. We can talk to Bellingham, Olympia, and mm-hmm. Edmonds, all at the yard. So, all right, so I'll take that as let's gather some more information and come back. Next one's a fairly easy one. Steve, you and I talked about this. And we got it on the business meeting this afternoon. We have to readopt our agenda format and our meeting schedule for the year. One of the things that staff wrestles with the new agenda format, with the first and second reading, which is good, but we have a lot of topics that, you know, don't fit first and second. You know, it's just an information topic, you know, something that's a little more important than just the staff comments. And so what we're recommending is that we add, I'm not sure what we'll call it yet, one more paragraph, if you will, in the agenda, and we may or may not use it every time, but just where we, you know, a boat ramp project update, or, you know, a breakwater update, those sorts of things. Maybe we could information items or something like that, call it, and just make it part of the agenda. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
I think it's good.
Yeah, still keep the first and second. still keep the first and second reading.
Right. I think it's important that we keep the first and second reading so that everyone has a chance to make sure they have a, you know, an opportunity to, that one doesn't pass them by. But on stuff that doesn't require policy decisions or that isn't really
right, we're not looking for a vote or anything. Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe that should be called other business.
Okay. I was gonna, maybe you could do that, Sue, is, you know, check some of the other port, you know, formats and see what the, I know I've seen that in a couple of them where they have an extra category, see what they call it, so.
About calling it staff business.
Calling it what business?
Staff business.
Staff business.
Possibly. Well,
that kind of limits it, so yeah. It could limit it.
Well, I mean, we already got staff comments. I mean, yeah. And which I can slide right into that. I mean, it's part of that. It's kind of already there, is what I'm saying.
As I was kind of looking at the staff comments, it's kind of the, I'm going to attend the NRBC meeting tomorrow.
But know, I'm just saying it could be an opportunity as well.
Yeah. Or like leases, you know, other business.
Bill.
So you have items like that that are things that a commissioner wants to bring up as informational or something that the staff wants to bring up as informational. Instead of you leaving that, you know, staff comments or commissioner comments kind of free form and open, just a line, maybe have a bullet just under that section that has, you know, a topic for that information. Something that essentially what the agenda does is notify the public that this is going to be spoken about. And, mm-hmm. And so we have that bullet point that kind of gets it across and gets it into a subheading that people can understand without elaborating too much.
Yeah, we just have other business, for example, and then under that, then we could put the things that are potentially going to be discussed so that people that are reading the agenda can say, oh, I'm interested in that. And, if it's just labeled staff comments and nothing's discerned, you know, they won't know. So that's a fine, good way to go. Bertram.
I thought another possibility is just discussion only.
Well, it's, you know.
Yeah, that's another.
Discussion, though. I have seen other business at other entities, and it's just kind of, I mean, I know I have one of those for today's meeting. It's kind of an FYI, and we haven't made the decision which way we're going. But, and there's no like first, second reading status, but this is where we are.
Yeah. So. Well, Sue's point of leases is very important. A lease mm-hmm. is other business.
Right.
And we fit into that.
And it's a broad category.
Yeah,
other
we'll
business.
Be a decision probably soon. Okay.
All right, we'll come up with something. The next item is, and this topic came up, I know Pete, you talked to me about this at the winter WPPA meeting. The Port of Olympia had just adopted a commission code of conduct, and that got staff looking at possibly doing a staff code of conduct, and whether the commission wants to do a code of conduct, obviously that's up to the commissioners. Here's a copy of what Olympia did, and I went in and took out Port of Olympia and put in Port of Port Townsend just to read. And it's pretty straightforward. And Abigail and I were going through our personnel policy, and
what's the code of conduct?
We have standards of conduct for employees, but not really code of conduct. And the standards of conduct cover things like you're not going to come to work drunk, you're not going to use drugs in the workplace, or you know those types of things. Kind of L&I related and et cetera, but we don't have a code of conduct that talks to the professional conduct, the civility aspect, you know, being a team player, and all those sorts of things. Kind of some of the same words in what I just handed out. So something to think about. I'm going to move forward with a staff code of conduct anyway. Abigail and I are going to kind of craft that in the coming month or two. And invite staff input into what they think that should read. I don't see anything more than a page or two, probably, kind of, again, what I just handed out sort of thing. So something to think about. I'll put a copy, Pete, in your box, because I just put this together, so. And if you want, Sue can email it if you'd like.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. You can put it in the box and email it if you wish to, and, I mean, this is one of those where I wish I was sitting in the room, because I think we, my only comment is, I think we really all have to work together for the betterment of the sport, and at times it has felt like, you know, there's been more undermining going on than support, and I think the code of conduct going forward with all commissioners, future commissioners, with and staff would really help move that out a little bit.
Okay. Any other discussion on that, or?
No, I'll have to go home and read it over.
The next one's an interesting one. We've talked about this off and on for years, a buoy test. In our rules and regulations, 4.02.090, seaworthiness and operability. Operable means capable of safely maneuvering under its own power from mooring to another port of call and back to its mooring. In cases where a vessel does not appear to have left its mooring for a long period of time and the question of operability arises, the harbor master may require a demonstration of the vessel's operability. And it talks about giving 30-day advance notice to the owner, saying you need to prove it, etc. And this keeps coming up quite often because of people that are on our wait list, you know, saying, you know, you got this boat down on Sea Dock that hasn't moved in 2 years. You know, I've been on your wait list for 3 years. How come? And what are you doing about it, type thing? A number of marinas do have an annual requirement to demonstrate the operability of your boat. And it's not all that onerous because, you know, obviously the people that are using the boats frequently, you know, if the moorage staff sees you take your boat out, they just check you off the list. You know, but towards the end of the summer, if you got a short list of, you know, 15 boats that nobody is identified as having moved that year, maybe it's something we ought to take a look at. We also have a number of boats, and Brad, you and I walked out on Linear Dock together before. It was
one of the ones with reeds going down attached to the bottom.
Yeah, this might be a way, you know, to help avoid the future risk of having a derelict vessel suddenly sitting inside a marina with the potential of sinking and all the rest that comes with that. So I'm just throwing it out there. Personally, I think it's something we should do. You know, as a well-run marina, I'm sure there'll be you know, a few folks out there not wanting to do it. You might want to have the outboard motor concession that day to rent outboard motors out, but something to think about. It is in our rules and regs, but to my knowledge, we've never done it.
I was at a NMTA conference, and I sat next to some other people at other marinas, you know, there were private marinas, and they seem, everyone that I talked to said they do it regularly. I mean, they don't let it slide. They make sure that everyone there's boats are just to remove the liability of having a sinker, you know, which if you look down the Linear Dock, we got some of those liabilities. And plus, you know, the wait list, it's a good way to get some people, some movement on the wait list without raising fees or anything, just get the dead wood.
Yeah. Well, it's, yeah, if you've got a marina filled with vessels that are constantly being used, then it's going to translate to marine trade work as well. Mm-hmm. Those vessels are going to have to be worked on, be hauled out, etc. If you've got a hangar queen out there that's just sitting and growing slime, and nobody's getting anything off of it. So.
Well, the spirit of the regulation is just to make sure that folks are responsibly maintaining their vessels. Okay. And then we don't end up with a big mess. And that's really what it's about. So, I suppose that could be accomplished in more ways than one. You know, if it looks like a boat that's been, you know, they're paying their bills, but it's in danger of sinking and they're an absentee owner or something like that, that becomes pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. But then again, if it's a boat that's well maintained and the owner's, you know, in Arizona for 6 months or something, that's something different.
Yeah. You know, if they come up in the summer and go sailing, then fine. You know, you can check them off the list.
Yeah, I'm not really so sure I agree with what Brad's idea of the spirit of the law was for. I think the spirit of the law was for access. You know, you have limited amount of access, and access is a crucial part of our port responsibilities. And if you have access being plugged up by people that don't utilize it because the boat just sits there, then people that actually need access don't have it available to them. So I think it might, to my mind, maybe more along the lines of providing access with limited facilities.
Do you think Tammy and the moor staff could come up with a list of vessels that they're pretty sure haven't moved? Now, one of the things that Abigail brought up is in our definitions and our rules and regs, we don't define a long period of time. We probably should define that. Is that a year, 2 years, 6 months?
We should probably also define that really going out and renting an outboard just to get out and back is not really according to the spirit or the intent of the law.
Yeah. Well, I'll be. Yeah, Pete.
Just one quick comment. You know, small ports conference last year, Port of Anacortes talked about the insurance issue. And not that I'm profiling or connecting derelict boats with no insurance, but they did kind of, I guess, more my concern than derelict boats or boats that are sitting, you know, in a dock for a long time and haven't been touched, is whether or not they have insurance. And I know we have that policy in place that all boats have insurance, and there's, you know, there's checklists for that. But like you and I talked about, Jim, when Anacortes actually went through and checked the books, they were surprised that there was a number, Steve, you were there, something like 40% did not have insurance. And that seems to be a bigger issue to check on that more than the derelict boat part of it.
Yeah, and we do require insurance. It's actually a state law now that boaters have to have insurance to be moored in the waters of the state. But it's a constant effort to keep up with it because, you know, insurance policies expire and, you know, most boat owners are conscientious and supply us with a copy of their renewed one.
Yeah, right. Port of Anacortes did an audit, and that's where they found out
Yeah, we need to look at that too, I think. And the other thing, and Jim reminded me of it, and I didn't put it on this list this morning, but it kind of goes along with the same topic. I think it was Anacortes that said they are now requiring background checks for liveaboards.
Mm-hmm. It was, and they supplied us with a copy of their background check affidavit.
And they said that went quite a ways in helping them manage, you know, who was in their marina. And we've had a number of incidences, police-type incidences, with some of our liveaboards. So that's something that I want to look at, too. So let's see if we can get a little bit of a feel for, you know, what we're talking about, Jim, and kind of come back to the commission with some more data. So.
Bill?
Kind of brought the same topic a little bit. With respect to the airport and airport tenants, I don't know whether the port has provisions about the airworthiness or annual inspection or condition inspection status of aircraft. I don't know whether the FAA grant requires, I know they don't like to have they like to have airplanes in hangars, not
boats on trailers with pickup trucks.
Yeah, but I don't know whether they have a similar sort of.
I'm not aware of any such requirement. And of course, you're the trouble with a derelict boat in the water. It's an environmental hazard, whereas a derelict plane in a hangar on a slab of concrete.
Yeah. The only question would be what the FAA's grant requirements.
And the other difference too is most of the hangars are privately owned, you're not on public. But, and it's another area that we've been very reluctant, at the airport. I think I recounted that one time coming back from Silverdale on a Saturday, just glancing over at the airport, and there's an F-250 with a nice $150,000 fishing boat on a trailer. The guy's washing it down, and so I pulled into the airport and went up to him, asked him how it was going. He said it was great, and looked in his hangar, didn't see any airplane, so I asked him where his airplane was. I don't know an airplane. That's where he keeps his boat. And that is illegal. So, but we've never said, okay, everybody open your doors. We're going to have a walkthrough next Friday.
In Oakland, where I used to have my airplane, they required that every year when you come back, you kind of come back in and do some paperwork every year with the Port of Oakland. And they required that you present them your annual inspection, your logbook, kind of for the year, showing that the aircraft that you said was in your hangar is an annual, or in the case of an experimental, and has a conditional inspection.
But what about the people that have old aircraft in their hangars that are restoring them?
Yeah.
At this point, I'd just be happy if they had an aircraft.
Yeah. Well, right. And there's the same issue with people building an aircraft.
And I have no problem with that. It's the boat on a trailer being stored there, or the RV, or the guy restoring the pickup truck that Jim and I just happened to come upon one day walking around out there.
I don't think this is much of a problem here, but in Oakland, there was, like a 15-year waiting list for hangars. So they were kind of anxious to get airplanes out of hangars that never went anyplace.
What do you think, Pete? Since you're the pilot, should we
look in all the hangars?
Do a little open your door, stand by your hangar inspection?
Heck no.
I'm willing to do it if the commission wants to back me up. I bet there'll be a lot of phone calls to you.
That would be a scary prospect to open up all the hangars, I think. No, I don't know. I'm in the middle. I didn't really hear all of what Phil was saying, past all of it, but I know the hangar next to me is owned by an individual. I guess the ground is not. The plane that's in that hangar has no fabric on it, and I doubt that plane has been touched in 10 years at least.
Does it look like a plane?
Does that matter? I mean,
to me, it doesn't.
I think that the problem here. Oh, go ahead, Pete.
No, go ahead, Steve.
I think the problem here, and I've heard this from a lot of people that don't have any interest in airplanes or hangars at all, but they have storage buildings and storage businesses, is that they don't want the port to be competing with their storage business by offering essentially subsidized storage for junk and stuff that they could be. Now, an airplane hangar is designed for an airplane, and if there's an airplane in it, that's great. The guy can have his table saw and his, whatever around there that he needs to work on airplanes, but at least it has an airplane. I think Larry's point is there should be an airplane in there, and if there is, then it's doing
well, it's really the law. I have to sign grant assurances with the FAA every time we take a grant, which has been many, that we will guarantee that all structures are used for aviation purposes. And I'll bet you there's a dozen of them that aren't.
Bill, you know as much as anybody. I think, for the most part, that's the case out of JEFCO. And I don't think that Jefferson County Airport is competing with any storages in terms of offering storage. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a couple of glaring examples out there, but I don't think it's by and large that way.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I just thought that, it, you know, we're talking about operability of vehicles, vessels, whatever, on port property, that it's probably consistent to, in some way, include the airport. On the other hand, of course,
I think the duty test point, number seven, is a tough one because it's fairly subjective. And I don't think anybody wants the marina to turn into a collection of, you know, addresses and mainliners. And so I think it's important that we maintain the character of port like it is, but I also think it's important that, you know, we're not jeopardizing people on the wait list or boats that, you know, maybe the husband died and the wife's still paying on it, and boat's just sitting there and rotting at the dock. And so I think that's a really tough question to answer, the whole buoy test question.
Well, I think staff's going to take a stab at answering it and see what data we can collect, and we'll let you know how we do and go from there. So,
John?
I agree with Bill in the interest of fairness. I mean, we're going to do this with boats, we have to do with aircraft and whatever else. I am troubled about the question of the wait list. I understand looking at boats as if they might be a derelict vessel. If a person's paying their mortgage and everything, what difference does it make to the system? The reality is in most of the marinas in this country, the boats sit there. They never leave the marinas. By far the majority, I would say. So I just find that troubling that the wait list becomes a factor here. It really shouldn't matter.
Well, if the boat just sits there, that's a good
thing. But it doesn't matter. How can the port define its usage?
We're not doing that. We're just saying that it has to be able to, the buoy test doesn't say you any boat that's not moved in over a year gets kicked out. It means that we're going to target boats we haven't seen move in a year and make sure they still work. And if they don't work, then they become a derelict vessel, essentially.
All right. And I understand
that. And I think that's the intent.
Don't connect it to the wait list.
Well, it is, because if we clear out a dozen slips,
yeah,
that's a dozen people lack the.
Well, what it's sounding like to me is that there's an issue to try to actually make the wait list move, even if somebody's paying the rent.
I think that goes back to Steve's point about waterside access, you know, or at the airport, you know, access to airport facilities for aircraft that are, or boats that are actually going to use that facility for the intended purpose, which is to navigate away from there to other places and back. If you have a boat you're living aboard, you could just as soon put it on a vacant lot on chocks. You know, if that's all you want is an apartment someplace. I think Steve's point is that if there's a waiting list of people who have boats that they want to have in the water because they want to use access to the water, then those people, you know, to the extent that people have their apartments on boats that don't have a motor or sails, you know, it's just an apartment, and that's not what the marina is about.
In fact, we have no legal authority to evict somebody if they are current on their mortgage payments, but we can evict them if they're not obeying other rules. And I'm sure there are some boats out there where, you know, maybe the husband passed away or something, and it's just too difficult for the wife to, you know, deal with it. And it's easier just to send a $200 check every month to the port. But as long as the boat's in good shape, we'll keep cashing the check. But I think it's the whole point of this is to, that we've got, and I don't think anybody will deny when you walk around the marina, we get some questionable boats out there.
That kind of gets back to Brad's point that the major reason is for health and safety for the risks to the marina. That's an area which I think most people can agree on. When you get into the usage thing, that it becomes a question of the marina. So that's not quite difficult to decide.
again, we're not getting rid of boats because people aren't using them. We're using the fact that they haven't been used to try to target boats that are no longer operable. That's a big distinction. We're taking inoperable boats out of the water so that someone that has an operable boat that's on a waiting list and never sees an end in sight will be able to get in there and utilize that facility because we have very limited space with boats. So the inoperability or the fact that they don't use it very often, I don't care about that. As long as we know that it's an operable boat, it can be used, and that's good. We'll use the inoperability, use the fact that it hasn't been used for years as a means of determining whether or not it can be used so that people who have boats that can be used can then in fact put them in the water and use them.
And I don't think we're saying the fact that we have a wait list is the primary reason for doing this. Just that's an ancillary effect.
Right.
That if you do open up some number of slips, then you've got new active voters that can move in and continue voting. So, in fact, I just saw a statistic. I can't remember exactly where it was. The average boat owner in Puget Sound uses his or her boat 12 times a year.
Wow, that's more than me.
Is that boats in the water?
Right, more boats, not trailer boats. But I'm not sure how they arrived at that statistic. And it's like any statistic, is that an average where you got one guy that used it 83 times and somebody else that used it once? Or how they did that. But I saw that somewhere. I was trying to find it yesterday. I couldn't find it. Last topic, February offsite. It's on our regular agenda this afternoon to look at some dates. Eric had a meeting with David Goldsmith. He's still working part-time at the county because they're still trying to fill the DCD position. But he's only doing, I think, 2 days a week now and feels he's ready to come back to us and help us with our strategic offsite. So we'll look at the dates this afternoon and probably over the next couple of weeks. So we need to look at some topics. I just put a few things. We already talked about readdressing the PSAC as one of the issues. But, what are the other things you want to look at? I just put down some, start researching some innovative ways to operate port facilities. There seems to be a willingness on the part of the commission now to perhaps part ways with some of our assets. We have the new days coming up, et cetera. Do we want to continue that? And then succession planning is something I think staff would like to address. We've got a number of people that are probably within 3 to 5 years of retirement. A lot of them are senior supervisors and staff. And we probably ought to start thinking about that, and how we're going to address that. So, but, any other topics, feed them to me. Verbally or email or whatever, and we'll start putting that together. And Eric and David come up with some suggested dates, or are we still?
I think they're looking at Monday or Tuesday, February 22nd or 23rd, or the Friday prior to that.
Okay, we'll look at it this afternoon. So, and I think that's about it. What we had on our list, Jim, you got anything else, or Abigail, Sue?
Bill?
This is saying the PSAC is going to be proposed to be discussed at off-site meeting. Would also be the subject of a workshop the public has for it.
Well, the off-site's open to the public too.
But they haven't been open to public input, right. Which brings back to what I asked for last time, that we have a workshop here where we can have public input to discuss the PSAC committee.
Well, I'm sure that the offsite will result in topics we'll bring back and discuss at meetings because we can't take any actions offsite. So the offsite meeting is going to be a way where we can discuss things that we want to see if we want to go forward for, and then that will, of necessity, because we can't act on it, have to come back to a business meeting. So yes, well.
Whatever the commission desires. Yeah, we could make it the topic of the next workshop.
That'd be good for me.
I think the public, I don't know if Bert veterans in the audience, but I think the public finds the off-site meetings helpful because they hear us as commissioners and staff talking pretty candidly about issues, and you know, they are able to walk away with a better understanding of what the board is thinking on different issues.
I don't have an issue with it being the subject of an offsite. My concern is that it not be something that is kind of an embedded topic that then comes back to a commission meeting or a commission workshop as a fait accompli.
Go ahead.
Bertrand is here.
Thank you, Pete. I think the workshop was terrific. And I think it was invaluable to hear what the commission is thinking. But I underscore what Bill is saying is that when something like modified copy comes out of it, that becomes somewhat of a fait accompli. And so that is my concern. About having an offsite workshop. So it should, as you say, Steve, it should be something that has no conclusion. It's just an interchange of ideas. Mm-hmm. But I felt like the modified copy that came from David and Goldsmith and Eric Taves that had all the lines crossed out, things changed, was, to me, bothersome. That was the next step and created a
Are you referring to the changes to the strategic plan?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
I'm kind of getting half syllables of Bertram and Bill, but I kind of picked up the gist of that. And I would only comment that if we have a strategic meeting with David Goldsmith and we have a discussion like about strategic plan. The agenda, both for the workshop and or the public meetings, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mary and Jim, but the agendas are, anybody can ask for input as far as an agenda item goes. So like in a workshop, or let's say we had a meeting with Goldsmith in February and we did discuss PSAC or strategic plan or something like that, and then Bertram or other constituents felt strongly, they can certainly ask that be put on an agenda for a workshop, and then we can have a fairly open discussion about it, give and take, outside of the strategic meeting that we might have with the results.
And in fact, that was the case, because we had two long sessions. And then the modified copy was presented at the workshop, at a morning workshop, with David and Aaron Pierre. So that was what happened.
Right.
And well, I believe there was no decisions made. It was only just a reference of the information that was marked up.
Right.
So I'm not sure where that goes.
Well, I think that it's working the way it's supposed to. We had a retreat. We discussed some various things that were at the retreat. Then Eric brought a lined in, lined out version of the debate, and we had of the strategic plan documents. And then we had a workshop where we discussed it. And I don't think that we've actually done any. We haven't made a motion on it. So in other words, the discussion is still active. The workshop was held that you were wanting to have your discussions or your input on. And so in my mind, it's working the way it's supposed to. We had our retreat where we discussed things openly amongst ourselves. The staff did their work to put those ideas down. We had a workshop that you were at and could comment on. And so we haven't moved on it yet, but in other words, it's open for public discussion and debate.
I understand that, Steve. The PSAC is supposed to be for the community to give something to the commission. what that meeting was, and I thought about it a great deal. That meeting was what the commission feels like they can live with in the previous PSAC document. But that's what you're asking is that a committee be formed of the public that can give you guidelines for where they feel the commission should be going. And what the document that was created was what the commission feels that they want to endorse.
George?
The commission are elected officials by all the citizens of the county. The buck stops with you folks. You're the ones that are going to have to make that decision, not the committee. And I think that when we get into a strategic plan, I think we ought to have a discussion on what that format ought to look like. And it needs to be broadened, considerably broadened, than what occurred before. And so I hope that you you have a discussion on what that format should look like.
I believe you will, yeah.
I would just say one thing, and that is, I really think that, and I've thought a great deal about this, that it would be good in a workshop to discuss the whole the process of the strategic plan, not just the strategic plan. Who gets to decide, who's the representatives, what the how much of that is going to matter in terms of committee, commission decision making. So the whole process needs to be discussed, not just the specifics of the strategic plan itself.
I agree. And I think that we're going to be doing that, right? I think that's
yeah, we staff need some guidance as to, you know, one, do we want to continue with the PSAC or some
yeah.
form, you know, what's it going to, how's it going to be made up? What's the purpose of the PSAC?
And that's, I think, what the topic
well
is.
Defined.
Yeah, that's the topic for the discussion, yeah.
But again, it's like in the city and the county, and everybody has similar issues with advisory committees in that the operative word is the advisory. And quite often when the elected body doesn't follow the advice of that committee, they're taken to task for not listening to anybody. But as somebody just said, you know, the buck stops with the elected officials. At the end of the day, you three are the ones that decide and run the board. So, but whether you want to do it as the offsite or a workshop, personally, I don't care. You know, I think either format, the venue would serve the same purpose. But
yeah, just from offering my opinion, I would like to do an offsite retreat, and I thought Ludlow was a excellent location because it's not in Port Townsend, but it's you know, it's drivable for everybody. So just for what it's worth.
Well, we'll look at some dates this afternoon and see if that's available, and kind of put a little agenda together. We're going to have to sit down with Eric and David Goldsmith again, and maybe you know, we can all think about the BSAC as an individual topic, the things that we need to review, and what we would like to see happen with that. So.
And did you just want to check Fort Ludlow's availability, or did you want to check?
Well, if we can pick a couple of dates this afternoon in the regular meeting, then maybe we can call Ludlow and see if they're available. I wouldn't mind having one all the way down in Coolsing too at some point, but if I remember, Wednesdays weren't good to the community center.
I would
center.
Love to have that.
Right, but this yeah. is a Monday or Tuesday, so.
They might be available at the community center. And we're going to have a couple of them, so we could do one in Ludlow, one in Coolsing, that sort of thing. So that's all staff has.
Okay. Well, that ends up, that's the topic of our workshop, so. I think that unless there's anything else, I'll go ahead. Oh, George?
Yeah, on a related subject, sort of related. You folks are acutely aware of your infrastructure issues here. The school district also has a major infrastructure problem, and that is Grant Street Elementary School. I would urge the commission, if they could, to endorse the school bond for Grant Street and the putting an elevator in the high school for ADA access. There is a meeting tonight at 7 o'clock at the Fort Townsend Community Center, in which is sponsored by the League of Women Voters. And all the details about that particular levy will be there. And I would encourage you to let it be known in the Boat Haven here that the Port of Fort Townsend supports this school bond. Chimicum is also doing the same kind of thing. Urge you to support that if you could. Thank you.
I believe, and we can check on Pat O'Malley's here this afternoon, I think the regulation, the RCW, allows the Port Commission to endorse initiatives, you know, those kind of efforts, as long as we're not involved from monetary standpoint, or, you know, we're not, you know, directly benefiting from the.
I definitely want to check the RCWs. I know just because ports are very unusual sometimes from other entities, but I've definitely seen other entities like hospital districts and stuff endorse school bonds.
The city council has endorsed it, and next week, I believe, the hospital district will also endorse it.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I don't think the vote is still